Okay, so first of all, I know that I've been so consistent with Shirm lately, but I'm hoping to work on that and be more consistent. I was in Israel and then I got very sick. I was in bed for a week and then I had finals. But I noticed that because I had such little time to learn beyond morning Seder in Yeshiva, I became very upset with how little I was learning, very dissatisfied. And then I had a certain like tshuka, a certain great desire to learn more Torah, and it kind of reminded me of the Gemara in Bracha says, "Im hayu bnei adam margishin." If people understood, if they really felt ni'imisu haTorah, if they really felt the beauty and the sweetness and the pleasantness of Torah, mishtagan acharei, they would go ecstatic. They'd be lovesick. They'd be going crazy all day long. They'd just be drooling over Torah. Why? Ki haTorah kolelas kol haTolos sheba'olam. That with contained within the Torah is all of the good that exists within the world. Anything good you could think of, it's in the Torah. It's there, or the Torah is better than it. And this reminded me of when somebody makes a siyum, when they finish a tractate in the Talmud, they say certain things. So one thing they say is, and I'll just say it in English instead of the Hebrew slash Aramaic, we say we go to the Beis Medrash, and other people they go to the street corners, they go to the pubs and the clubs. Everybody arises early. Some people arise early to hear words of Torah. Other people arise early to hear words of gobbledygook. We all work, but we work for schar, we work, and what we work for, we reap reward. Other people work and they don't reap any reward. And then it says, everybody runs, but we run toward Torah. They run toward a pit of desolation. This is the best thing ever. It also reminds me of the Gemara says that Rabbi Nihara said, Meniach ani kol umos shebaolam. I tried out every single profession that exists in the world. I tried every discipline, every single form of academia, every single scholastic area out there. Eini melamed bnei ala Torah. I'm only going to teach my child Torah. And this, I was kind of like when I was studying for my law school finals, I was reading about the legality of what's called vitro gametogenesis. It's one of those words again that I've read, never said. So I hope I pronounced that correctly. But it's essentially where they make artificial egg and they make artificial semen and they can create a baby. And as I was studying this stuff, I don't know. I kept thinking to myself like I would just so much more rather be learning because HaTorah kolelas kol haTovos sheba'olam, with contained within the Torah is all of the good that exists in the world. So at a certain point, I was upset, I was perturbed, I was disturbed by how little I was learning. And there were two things that gave me comfort. The first is a letter that Maimonides wrote, where he goes through his daily schedule from the beginning of the day to the end. And he says, at this time I wake up, I pray, then I see my patients because Rambam was a doctor. Then I see the Sultan because he was the Sultan in Egypt's doctor. And then these people come to me for advice. These people come to me to discuss their philosophical issues. These people come to me for medicine. These people come to me to ask me their halachic questions. And then Rambam writes, I put my head on my pillow at night and it pains me a little time I have to learn. So I thought, you know, this is something Rambam struggled with as well. So I'm no different. And it was a source of comfort for me. The other thing is that I was thinking, you know, I don't have so much time to learn. Then I thought, you think you're so frum that you're so upset you don't have time to learn? Hashem doesn't learn all day. How do I know? The Gemara in Avodah Zarah, hyperbolically, it goes through Hashem's schedule. It goes through what he does on a regular day. And it says that Hashem divides his day into four. His nights are a different story, but his days, which is divided into 12 hours, are divided into four. And it says the first 3 hours Hashem learns Torah, just 3 hours he's learning Torah, that's it. The next 3 hours he's a dayan, he's a rabbinic judge. The next 3 hours, he sustains the world. The world's a big place. He has to spend time sustaining it. Like we say, Hashem is Amechadish B'tuva B'chol Yom Tamid, that Hashem sustains the world. He renews it every single day with his goodness. And then in the fourth hour, what does Hashem do? He plays with his pet Leviathan. Leviathan is like a pet, like dragonfish. It says that Hashem spends one fourth of the day playing with his pet dragonfish. So it's okay. Sometimes you got to chill out. Hashem chills out. We could chill out. Hashem has fun. We could have fun too. But with that, we'll get into the Tehillim, which is we're going to do Tehillim chapter 137. So you could take it out now. If not, you could just follow along with me. Chapter 137, Tehillim Kuf Lamed Zayin, which I think will be familiar to people, or at least if not the entire thing familiar, at least a significant portion of it will be familiar. Okay, so we'll start up Kuf Lamed Zayin, the first verse, which starts off. Al Naharos Babel, Sham Yushavnu Gam Bachinu B'Zachrinu Hatzion. On the rivers of Babylon, there we sat and cried as we recall Jerusalem. So the context here is that It's referring to Bnei Israel after being exiled from the land of Israel after the destruction of the temple. They're now sitting on the rivers of Babylon where they were exiled, and they're sitting down crying about the destruction of the temple, about their exile from Jerusalem. So it seems like King David didn't write this Psalms. But then the Gemara in Gittin says as follows. It says that David HaMelech did in fact write this Tehillim. What happened was Hashem gave David HaMelech Nevuah, and Hashem showed David HaMelech that one day the Beis HaMikdash is going to be destroyed, the first one and the second. And when David HaMelech saw that would happen, he then composed this psalm, he composed this chapter, so that we would be able to read it and find some sense of comfort when we were exiled. Now, this is not the first time that King David does this. Also, over Hanukkah, we read a special Tehillim. We read Tehillim chapter 30, which starts off Mizmor Shir, a psalm, a song, Chanukas HaBayis LeDavid, the institution of the house to David. Institution of what house? The institution of the house of Hashem, the institution of the Beis HaMikdash. King David saw, he had prophecy that the Beis HaMikdash was going to be built. He wanted to build it, but that wasn't going to happen. But he at least decided, I'm going to compose a song that they're going to sing when the temple is built. And he composed Tehillim 30. So he composed a psalm for when the temple would be built, and he composed a psalm for when the temple, both temples would be destroyed, which is very nice of him. There's a verse in Shmuel, in the second book of Shmuel, that says King David was Na'im Zmir Yisrael. His songs were the favorite of the songs of Israel. So it's very sweet of him that he knew he was a popular composer, and he thought, I'll compose a song that will last eternally, or that will give comfort to the Jews, to my descendants, when the temple is destroyed. So the Malbim points out that when it starts off Al Naharos Babel, on the banks of Babylon, Sham Yushavnu, there we sat. Malbim says, Yushavnu, it doesn't mean we sat there like we were literally sitting down. Like we sat down crisscross applesauce. What it means is we sat there like we were Yushavim, like we settled there. Like think about it. In Israel, you have Yishuvim, you have settlements. So we were settling in Babylon. Things were good in Babylon. We had good material, we had good wealth. Life was chill. But the Malbim says, even though life was chill, even though Sham Yushavnu, Gam Bachinu, we were also upset. Why? Because the material was immaterial to us. None of this material mattered. None of the fact that we were chilling in Babylon, enjoying our lives, none of that mattered. B'zachrinu Aztzin, when we were thinking about the fact that the base of Mikdash is destroyed, when all we could do is long for Zion, long for the return to Israel. So that's verse one. Then you have verse two, which is Al Aravim B'socha Talinu Kinrosenu. On the willow trees, we hung up our lyres. We hung up our harps. We hung up our instruments. Meaning, Jews in Babylon were miserable. They were very upset with the destruction of the temple, and they decided, what are we going to do? We're going to sing. We could find some consolation through singing, specifically Tehillim Kuf Lamed Zayin. But they still couldn't muster up the strength to play instruments. So they hang their instruments up. They're not going to play instruments. It's a cappella. It's the 3 weeks. It's 9 days. They're sad. They're going to sing for comfort. They're going to sing for consolation, but it can only do so much because they can't really enjoy the music the way a person would enjoy music. So they're going to sing with no instruments, a cappella. Then we go to verse three, which is Kisham She'alunu Shovenu Divrei Shir V'Solalenu Simcha Shiru Lanu Mishir Tzion. Our captors, the Babylonians, asked us to sing. Our tormentors wanted us to sing for their amusement. They wanted us to sing a song from Zion. They wanted us to play Zionist Israeli music. They wanted us to play Hatikvah, Itzik Dadya, whatever it was. They wanted us to play the music that we grew up with, the music of Zion. And the Malbim says that the Babylonians were confused. They saw that we have all this great music. We have all this great Zionist. We have all this great Israeli music originating from the land of Israel, Zionist cultured music. And they said, we don't get it. You have this good music. You sang it in the base of Mikdash. You're singing it here. Sing it for us. Just like take your beautiful music and do it in a style that's Babylonian, meaning we invite you into our culture. Take your culture from Israel and learn how to synthesize it with our culture of Babylon. We're inviting you in. We're welcoming you in. Come. Babylon can replace Jerusalem. So this reminded me of this article that was in Haaretz, where it was saying how there was this lady that was very talented at piano, And when she was in either a concentration camp or a death camp, I don't remember which one. So Dr. Mengele took notice of her piano abilities, and he liked classical music. It was known that the Nazi Party, they really liked classical music. So Mengele particularly liked Schubert's Serenade. He liked Ave Maria, and he decided, I'll keep her alive if she can play music for me. That was the concession that was made with her. And what he did was, every time she would mess up a key, he had his attack dog that was sensitive toward the nuance of every key bite. This is I should have given a trigger warning for this, but he would have the attack dog bite her anytime she made a mistake.
Can I question or should I wait till you finish?
Maybe wait until the end of this verse, and then I'll actually no, do it now because I'm gonna forget to call on you. Go. Sure.
So you're saying two things. I know this was written before what happened, but in fact, most of the Jews didn't return to Israel from Babylon. They
Correct.
were happy there. They stayed. And secondly, when they went back to Israel, they forgot so much of their Judaism. So it says here they're singing their songs and they write, but they forgot everything. They really didn't know anything anymore.
So there's actually a debate among the commentators. When did they exactly recite this psalm? Either they recited it immediately when they got to Babylon, in which case, yeah, so when they immediately got to Babylon, Israel was in mind. And then over time, they started to forget. So that's one option. The other option is that this psalm actually happened much later. And you're right, most Jews didn't come back to Israel. So what do you mean? We're saying don't forget about Zion. That's what they're singing, but then they did forget about it because soon after they ended up back in Israel. So the answer is that this was actually like a very select group. Like in the days of Ahasuerus, most Jews were assimilated. That's why the story of Purim, the story of in Megillas Esther, starts off Vayehi b'mei Ahasuerus. These are in the days of Ahasuerus. So the Koshnitzer Rebbe told me that was the problem. They were in the days of Ahasuerus. They weren't in the days of Mordechai. He said the same thing today. Don't be in the days of Biden. Don't be in the days of Trump. Be in the days of like the great rabbis of our generation. So yeah, you're right. Either this was early on or this was later, but either way, it seems to be that they did forget. Yeah. Did I address everything you said? Was there another thing that I didn't address?
No, thank you.
Oh, perfect. Okay. So back to what I was saying before, which is that the Germans, they appreciated arts, they appreciated culture, they appreciated beauty, they appreciated the fine things in life, but that didn't restrain them from immorality or from malevolence. So it's the same thing with this verse. Babel, the Babylonians, appreciated culture. They were very cultured people, but they weren't elevated. They didn't have a certain degree of dignity. They loved good music, so they wanted us to sing for them, but they had no class. They were cruel. Their opulence was decadent. It's kind of like the Talmud says that Rabbi Yishmael Kohen Gadol, Rabbi Yishmael, the high priest, was a good-looking dude. He had riz. He was a good-looking guy. And when he was being put to death, somebody in Roman nobility saw how good-looking he was, and she asked just like carve off the skin of his body to preserve it so I can enjoy it for a little. So to her, his suffering was insignificant compared to the aesthetic experience. So Babel is inviting us in. They're not interested in their cruelty and their immorality. They just care about culture, and that's the pitch they're giving us. Come, sing for us. We don't care. Forget about values. Drop all that. Drop ethics. Drop morality. Drop Torah, and just come sing for us. Enjoy the great culture. Enjoy the fine arts. Enjoy the beauty. So, what's our response? The next verse says our response. It says, "Eich nashir es shir Hashem al admas nehar." How could we sing the songs of God on foreign, on alien land? We reject their offer. We're not interested. We know that you don't have values. We know you have culture. We know that you would value beauty, but we know that you don't value the Torah, which is morality, which is ethics. You don't have that. So we say no, we reject it. Eich nashir ashir Hashem al admas nechar. Then we get to the next verse, which I think one of the reasons why I wanted to do this chapter of Psalms is one, it's Rabbi Nachman's top 10, but two, I think that we sing this song at weddings. We sing it all the time. And like, it's important to understand what we're saying so that we don't go through it obliviously. At least now we'll have an idea of what's going on. So verse, hey, Imeshkachich Yerushalayim, Tishkachimini. If I forget Jerusalem, forget my right hand. A few weeks ago, we did chapter Tes Zayin of Tehillim, which is also one of Rabbi Nachman's top 10. And there was a verse, Shivisi Hashem Lenegdi Samid. I am ever mindful of Hashem's presence at all times. Ki mimini ba'lemot. And if he is by my right hand, I will not falter. So there's this idea that you'll see a lot in the Bible, and you'll see a lot in the Talmud, and a lot in biblical literature, of the right hand representing strength, the right hand representing the essential nature of a person. For example, a Kohen can't do service in the temple if he's left-handed. He's considered a Baal Mum. It means he has a blemish. The right hand is considered so essential to the human being. So to hear, Tishkach imini, forget my right hand. If I forget Jerusalem, Jerusalem is as integral to me as my right hand is. So if I'm going to forget that, I might as well forget everything. That's what the verse is saying here. It's impossible to not think about Jerusalem the same way it's impossible to not have my right hand. It's impossible to live our lives without Zion, without Jerusalem, without the land of Israel. We always have to have it on our mind. Then you have the next verse, verse 7, which is Tidbak lishoni lechiki imlo eskerechi imlo ale es Yerushalayim al rosh simchasi. If I forget you, if I don't think about you, if I don't think about you, Jerusalem, even in the best of times, rosh simchasi, let my tongue get stuck to my palate. And it's from this verse that we learn that even in the best of times, like a wedding, you still break a glass to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Or whatever we do in life, we always do something. You know, maybe we just allow one part of a home that was constructed to remain unconstructed. Whatever it is, we always leave something out. Why? Because even in the best of times, Rosh Simchasi, we still have to do something to remember Jerusalem. And Tidbak Lishoni, which means that we should let my tongue get stuck to my palate, is the idea that there's no point of talking if we're not going to remember Jerusalem. Every single word that comes out doesn't mean anything, it's futile. Doesn't matter if Jerusalem's not coming to mind. Okay, then you have the next verse, verse Zion, which is Zichar Hashem Livnei Adam, as Yom Yom Yerushalayim, Ha'omrim Aru Aru Ad Hayesod Bah. Remember Hashem, how the Edomites destroyed Jerusalem, how they stripped her, so badly, and they stripped her very foundations. So this verse refers to the destruction of the second temple. We started off Al Naharos Babel, on the banks of Babylon. But over here we're saying Edom, which is the Edomites, which is the Romans. So the Gemara in Gittin that I quoted before says, yeah, because King David was writing this for the destruction of the first temple and also the second temple. This psalm is eternal and it works for both temples. And what we're saying here is, remember Hashem, how the Edomites destroyed your temples. And we're saying, Hashem, if I'm going to remember that the temple was destroyed and I'm going to think about it all the time, have my mind on it, I'm always going to remember it. Yerushalayim, I'll never forget it. It's so essential, so integral to my psyche, so integral to my thought process, to my consciousness. Then you also better remember it. I'm making a deal. I'm going to remember Jerusalem, but Hashem, you should remember Jerusalem too. And remember that you got to rebuild it. Remember to keep that in mind. And remember to avenge those that destroyed the temple. Okay, then we get to the last two verses, which I'll read together because they're similar, and then I'll zug down it a little bit. Starting with verse 8, Bas Babel Hashduda, daughter of Babylon that's plundered, Ashrei she'yashalei mlach es gemuleich she'gumata lanu. I give a bracha to whoever inflicts upon the daughters of Babel what Babel inflicted upon us. I give you a blessing. Do to Babylon what they did to us. Then Ashrei sheyoches venipets es elalayich el hasula. Praiseworthy is somebody that seizes their babies and dashes them against rocks. It's a very violent verse, so we're going to have to unpack this because Dibra Torah kolashim bnei adam. The Torah is written in their human vernacular, meaning we could learn something on a personal level from it. This is not telling us to wage war, because it is true. We do have this commandment of Amalek. You got to wipe out Amalek. Nashim anashim betav. You got to wipe out the men, women, and children. If you want to know if Judaism's egalitarian, we know right here why. Because men and women have to be killed, and also children. We don't differentiate between genders. That's the commandment. But also, there's something deeper behind what's going on here, which is as follows. When it's saying we have to kill these babies, we have to kill these daughters of Babylon, it's referring to certain sprouts of the Yetzer Hara, certain sprouts of bad ideas, of an evil inclination that are seemingly harmless. It's minuscule. will think it's a baby. It's fine, whatever. A baby's harmless. It doesn't mean anything. Okay, but embedded within that seemingly innocuous, cute thing is something so destructive, something so bad. And how do I know? Because daughters of Babylon, their roots are Babylon. They're just the offspring of that. It is inherently impure. Its roots are impure, and it has to be destroyed. It's kind of like Yishmael. The verse in Bereishis says that when Yishmael was a baby, he was not doing well. He was going to die. And Hagar cried out to God and said, God, please save Yishmael. And the verse says that Hashem heard Yishmael's cries. That's what Yishmael means, Yishmakel, that Hashem heard the cries of Yishmael and heard Hagar pray to him. And what happens? Hashem heard the cries, but Asher Husham. He heard the cries as Yishmael was. And Hashem decided, I'm not going to destroy Ishmael because why? Yeah, later it's going to be bad news. But for now, Yishmael is harmless. He's a baby. It doesn't mean anything. So what we learn out here is that actually, what is seemingly innocuous, what seemingly is a baby, it's cute. I'm sure Yishmael was a cute baby. Doesn't matter. We have to like get with the program now. When we see sprouts of something bad beginning, we don't ignore it, we don't disregard it. We take heed to it, and even though it's seemingly cute, even though it's subliminal, even though it's trivial, even though it's minuscule, actually there are small sprouts that need to be addressed. It's like a small cell that eventually expands into a disease. You want to get the cell when it's small. Don't disregard it. That's what that final verse is saying. And kind of like what we were discussing earlier today, actually, at a certain point, most Jews didn't go back to the land of Israel. In fact, Ezra puts a curse on the Yemenite Jews for not returning to Israel, that they should be impoverished, that they should be illiterate, that they should be what's the word? They should be attacked by their enemies. And so ask your Yemenite friends, they usually don't name their children Ezra. Why? Because Ezra put a curse on them that they should be impoverished, illiterate, attacked, persecuted, and historically speaking, the Yemenites were. But for the most part, a lot of Jews did not come back. Why? Because of these small sprouts of the Yetzirah. First, they remembered Jerusalem. Then they forgot it a little bit. Then they forgot it a little bit more. Then they forgot a little bit more until it metastasized. So the idea is to always keep Jerusalem in mind and always to keep these small things in mind so that they don't get out of hand. And it's kind of like what we discussed before, that on the one hand, aver goreis avera, one small thing leads to another, but also mitzvah goreis mitzvah, one good deed leads to another. So it's the same thing in the vice versa. Remember the small things that are good. Remember the small things that are bad, and you'll preclude the bad things from metastasizing, and you'll allow the small things that are good to spread wide.
Can you just follow up the story from the Holocaust? The woman was a concert pianist. Did you finish the story or was there more to it?
Did I not finish it?
Oh,
Oh,
you
no,
said the guiding.
it
I
was
made a
that.
mistake. I know, just wanted to, and then if you knew where it was, when she was, excuse my voice, the dog was biting her when she made a mistake, and that's when you left off.
Yeah, exactly. That was really it. But the point was that that he didn't care about human suffering. He cared about the beauty of music. So he wasn't interested in his values were rooted in beauty, aesthetics, but they weren't rooted in caring about the human beings behind those things. So that story, she actually survived, and they interviewed her in Haaretz magazine.
They also had the orchestra in Auschwitz.
Yes, they had the orchestra, correct. Yeah, and they would play. They play Wagner. I mean, Richard Wagner happened to be an anti-Semite, so they liked his thought. But they would play his music as well, which is beautiful music, but it's coming from Russia. It's coming from a very bad person. I know it's like a big debate in the Israeli like opera scene, or the, excuse me, the Israeli classical music scene. Do we play his music or not? Because on the one hand, his music is good. It's geschmack. But on the other hand, the author is so terrible, and maybe we need a vibe with the authenticity of the author in order to play his music. Because maybe subliminally you come to like subsume part of the author's identity. Like, can we really separate the author from the text? Can you separate the composer from the composition? So it's like a debate in Israel. I personally don't. I think it's like too creepy to listen to him. But yeah, they were very cultured. They were very into fine beauty, but they weren't into the values. They weren't rooted in morality. It was rooted in aesthetic pleasure at the expense of human suffering. Yeah. Okay, so if anybody wants to stay on, talk, ask questions, feel free. But otherwise, we're done here. But I'm happy to stay on. Rav Shua, actually, so tonight's Christmas Eve, I guess. I'm not giving a Christmas here, but there are those that like have a practice. You don't learn Torah on Christmas. They call it Nitalnach. So I asked Rav Shua, can I give a shir tonight? He said, yeah, it's fine. We're not machmir on such a thing. They have like a lot of different reasons. Part of it was traditionally, there would be pogroms on Christmas night, so they thought If you're learning Torah, then your candle's going to be lit, and then they're going to see you and kill you. Another one was that today is considered like that, like the Torah being learned might end up morphing into like Christian idea somehow. So they're like, I know Torah. So a lot of like today, especially the Hasidim, they don't learn tonight. A lot of them, you can look up online, Nittelnacht. A lot of the Hasidim like play chess tonight. They sing. American Dream has like a whole thing going on. But it's not, we're Makel, we're Makel. You could learn Torah tonight if you like. I give you permission to learn Torah tonight. Yeshua gives you permission. You're allowed to learn Torah tonight, Find some other chumra to keep. But also that ties into what I opened up with that Hashem splits his day into four. And okay, yeah, he learns Torah for a lot of the day, but one fourth of the day he's playing with his pet Leviathan. He's playing with his pet fish dragon. So, life is not only learning Torah, life you do other stuff too. You get out of your get out of the books, get into the world. But it's meant to be, it's cute agada. It's cute rabbinic, I don't know how to say agada, rabbinic exegesis or something like that, They're just like cute stories. It doesn't mean literally that God divides his day into, four.
But it must be something more and more in depth.
Yeah, it's something there's much more depth behind it. And then there's a debate, actually, maybe since the destruction of the temple, this is in the Talmud and Avodah Zarah on the third page. It says maybe since the destruction of the temple, actually, God doesn't play with the Leviathan anymore. And he's too busy like crying and stuff because he's so upset about the destruction. But it's all meant to teach us something more profound. I think here it's meant to teach us that actually, like, there's more to life than being serious. Like Hashem chills out, so we could chill out too. That's what I think the depth is, that like you don't always have to be like being productive. Just enjoy life. Like enjoy the world that God gave us. That's what I think.
And the other 12 hours, what is he doing?
Oh, so that was nighttime. I had a whole different schedule. You gotta look on Avodah Zarah on the third page. That's a whole different schedule he had at night.
Is Tehillim also allowed to be said at night? Because I heard someone say you shouldn't. Is there a reason?
There is an idea that certain that Tehillim shouldn't be learned at night. But again, these are not things that we really follow. There's also an idea that you shouldn't read the books of Chetuvim on Shabbos. I give you permission to. You're good. Go learn it. Go learn it all you want on Shabbos. Go learn Tehillim, say Tehillim all you want all night. There are ideas that like certain things you don't say at certain times. Maybe you're also supposed to learn Torah She'eh Baal Peh at night only, not Bichsav. We don't need to
Right.
think about it too much. I give
Okay.
everyone permission to learn whatever they want always, except for Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av, you're not supposed to learn in the beginning of the day.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Just a quick question.
Yeah.
When you said that Shem divides the day into four, I was also told he does matchmaking, as a matchmaker interested
Yes.
in
Yeah. It says that
me.
Hashem does matchmaking. Yeah. And there's also two more things
Really?
behind this. One is that Hashem does matchmaking. And then there's a Gemara that says that like people were like, yeah, these calls are not so good. So then Hashem was like, all right, you try. You try, you make better calls. And then like everybody like was like kicking and punching each other the day after they got married from the setups that like Hashem didn't make and other people made. Meaning Hashem makes matches and he does a better job than we do.
For sure.
And the other thing is that like 40 days before we're born, there's a certain heavenly voice that like calls out who's gonna marry who. And like that's the person you're destined to marry.
Except when it's not.
Yeah, but then there's an idea of a zivig rishon and a zivig sheni that there's your first partner and your second partner, and actually you're meant to marry the first person in order to be metaken, in order to rectify some certain thing that needed to be rectified, that your soul needed to rectify, or you needed to go through some experience in order that you can meet the second one.
Got it.
But yeah, everything that
Okay.
happens is about this. It's meant to be hard to say, very hard to say, but I'm just quoting Chazal. These are not Jared Sharf's ideas, but yeah,
Ashikah. That's
sure.
excellent. Thank you.